Blog Talk Radio.
Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
All right. You are here and you are listening to our special Valentine's weekend edition. And I'm very happy to welcome back Christopher Scott. He was with us at the end of last year and he had such a wonderful broadcast. That broadcast was called Remembering How to Love. And just by hearing his story, I thought to myself, you know what, I would love to have you and your wife come back and talk to us about your story, about the power of love and the power of staying in love. You know, many of us get caught up with the butterflies and the romance, and all of that is nice and wonderful, but you want to be able to go the distance, right? You want to be able to stay in love over the course of time, and so I'm very happy to have both musician, singer, writer, and producer Christopher Scott back with us and his wife, Erica. Now, many of you have seen the Every Kiss Begins with K commercials, and I see them during this time of year and during Christmas and Mother's Day. And I always thought, you know, these are so, you know, cute and artificial. But guess what? They're actually real. So one of the things that I showed, if you didn't get to see it, it is my Facebook page, Don't Give Up Radio. I have their commercial by K Jewelers explaining their love story, explaining how they met each other when he was 8 and she was 12 or 13 years old. And somehow years later, they reconnected. And yes, they got married. And yes, they're wonderfully in love. But it's a real journey where she has had to really look at her own past and things that she has gone through. And we can hear from his story that he shared with us, Remembering How to Love. There were things that he went through individually. So now when two people come together, of course, there is going to be an issue where they have to learn how to stay in love with each other. So when we come back, we are going to be listening to the story of Chris and Erica Scott. Welcome, Chris and Erica Scott. Glad to have you on the show.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having us.
Hey, Jackie.
Oh, hi. Happy New Year to you.
You too.
Well, it's great to have you, and I was excited to have you back on the show because, Chris, when you were on and we did, you know, the Remembering How to Love, you brought up so many wonderful things and so many interesting things about the relationship that the two of you have, and I really wanted to have the opportunity to explore that a little more. So, you know, as I was setting up the show for the listeners, I was talking to them a little bit about the K commercial, right, and how I always thought those were just completely made-up situations, and then I saw your commercial, and it so touched my heart. So why don't you share with us a little bit about that story about, Chris, you meeting Erica when you were 8. Do you remember this moment and how that came to be?
Yeah, I mean, my dad and her pastor were best friends. And so we were constantly, she was in Baltimore and I was in North Carolina. But our churches would always kind of fellowship. And so we were there, and I remember seeing her at the front of the sanctuary in this blue churchy dress. And that was like the first time I looked at her, and I was just mesmerized by this woman. And now I'm 8. Now I grew up with the runt genes, so it took me a while to kind of grow into my age. I was smaller than everybody, and she was a little older than me, so she was in her early teens.
12.
She was 12.
Yeah.
She was 12. So it was that's years, eons apart at that age. But I remember I told my mom, I said, that's the woman that I want to marry. And 20 years later, I had a dream about her, 11/6/07. And the Lord told me that this was my wife, and I hadn't talked to her in, man, it's been
16 years
since I had talked to her. But it just so happened the next day that I woke up, I had one of those crazy chain letters from one of her aunts, and I responded, and I just told her to let Erica know that, you know, I'm thinking about her, yada, yada, yada. And within a few minutes, Erica had responded to me, and we've been tight ever since.
Wow. You know, I know I come up in the Tom Thumb wedding era. I don't think they still do that anymore, where you have these mock weddings with little children in church. And I remember there had to have been at least 3 occasions where my Tom Thumb husband was like, I'm going to marry you when I grow up. And I even remember sharing a bus ride with a kid and both eating Cracker Jacks. And there was, like, a diamond ring in his Cracker Jack box, and he, like, proposed to me on the bus ride, and our parents thought it was hilarious. But, you know, you don't put any stock in it. I actually kept that Cracker Jack ring for a long time. But, you know, those moments happen, but you don't necessarily think that you will actually reconnect again. So when you had that first conversation, what were some of the things that just jumped out at you that said, you know what, this is something that's real here that we can actually pursue?
I mean, it was an instant
connection. For me, it was an instant connection. When I saw his email from my aunt, she forwarded, you know, his email, you know, to tell Erica I love her, I pray for her, hope she's doing well. She forwarded that, and when I saw it, you know, I said, oh, that's sweet, because I'm thinking, you know, I'm seeing him in my mind. The last time I saw him, I was taller than he was. So I'm thinking, oh, that's so sweet, you know, little Chucky, he remembered me, you know. And so I responded, and we get on the phone later that day, and, you know, he gets on the phone, and he's all, hello. You know, and I'm like, this is not the little boy I remember, you know, but as soon as I heard his voice, and granted, I'm not a fairy tale girl. I'm very reality. There's no grays with me. I'm either black or white. And I got on the phone with him, and as soon as he said, hello, Jackie, I was in love. And I didn't say anything for a long time because it scared me. You know, I wasn't looking for love. I wasn't, you know, what, you know, I didn't understand what just happened. So he kept saying, hello, hello, you know, so I had to say something. But, you know, it, that's just how quick the connection was. And ever since that day, you know, we've been talking every day since, all day, every day.
That first day, we talked all night long.
Oh, wow.
We talked all night long.
Yeah.
And the
fact, I got off the phone so that I could go to work.
Right.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, my. Okay. So let's get into this a little bit because, you know, we hear great stories all the time. I love a great story. I want to be in a great story, you know, and we all believe in the happily ever after, but then we neglect to think about the real work that has to go into making a relationship and making it last, right? And so, Chris, when you were on the show the last time, you talked about how suffering people forget how to love and healing after the trauma. And, Erica, I know that you know, during these years that Chris had not been in your world, you were living your own life and you were going through your own experiences and your own trauma. Can you share with us a little bit some of the traumatic things that you went through as a woman in regards to relationships?
Yeah, I was, before Chris found me, I was married for 10 years to my first husband. It was, we got married very young. It was very unhealthy. I went through physical, emotional, and verbal abuse. When you're young, you know, it's hard to go through that anyway, but when you're young, it adds confusion to the mix because you don't quite, you're kind of figuring yourself out all at the same time. You know, so I stayed there, and 10 years later, we got a divorce. But by that time, I had two small children that depended on me. So I experienced a lot through going through that trauma and then attempting to heal from it while being a single parent, and these little girls are looking at me every day. It was very difficult a lot of times deal with my own feelings of rejection and hurt and everything else that came along with the failing of a marriage and a divorce, and then to have to deal with the fear of looking in the eyes of two little girls that depend on you for everything, and you don't know where your next is coming from. You know, it was a lot. It's a lot going through trying to deal with your trauma, trying to deal with the hurt, and then trying to push through it all, trying to I became a master at wearing a mask, you know, because I was still going to church through this, and you know, everybody would always see me smiling, although I would go home and cry at night a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a time I went through a horrible depression. I started drinking. I became an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
I contemplated suicide. It was a lot. Mm-hmm. It was a lot going on, and I didn't feel I was surrounded by people constantly, whether it was at work or my family or at church. I was surrounded by people constantly, but always felt alone. You know,
yes.
Always felt isolated, like no one understood my world. So when you're going through that and you're pushing through that every day, it gets very difficult. And, you know, toward the time where Chris found me, I was in a place of my life where I had found a semblance of healing and peace. And I wasn't looking to get back into a relationship. I wasn't looking or searching for love. You know, I had moved to Virginia with my girls, and we had started over, and I had a great job and great friends, and I had told God, you know, I reconnected with God because I left church for a while, but I reconnected to my source. And I told God, I said, okay, God, it's just me and you. You know, I'm satisfied with that, you know, with everything that I was surrounded with the new place of peace that I was in. I didn't need a relationship. I didn't need any of that, or so I thought. But God mm-hmm. had different plans for my life, apparently. And, you know, when I wasn't looking for it, when I was just focused on God and my relationship, and when I wasn't looking, Chris found me and love found me. And it scared me so because I wasn't ready for it. I wasn't praying for that. I wasn't, you know, I was just praying that, you know, God, I want my relationship with you to be strengthened. I want to regain everything that I lost in the time that I went through the trauma and the depression. I want to get back to where I need to be and my destiny, fulfilling my destiny for you in my life. And that was the focus of my prayers. And in the midst of that, He sends the love of my life my way. So it was
wow.
it was overwhelming, to say the least.
I can relate with you in so many areas of what you're saying. I also got married really young. In fact, you know, it's funny because at the time people were telling me I was young, but because I was 23 and because I had been independent and on my own for so long, I didn't perceive myself as being young. And now I have a daughter who's 22, about to become 23. I'm like, oh, you know what? I was kind of young when I got married.
Yeah.
And also, you know, 10 years married, and, you know, we had 3 children out of it. So I absolutely understand what you're saying, the feelings of rejection that you're going through in your own mind. And then also have to deal with the perceptions of other people, whether it's family members, in-laws, people from the church. There's a lot of navigation that you're going through, having your kids try to adjust well and be there for them. But you touched on something mm-hmm. that I wanted you to go a little deeper on, and that's mm-hmm. the depression and the drinking. And that's because I definitely found myself in a long-term depression that others around me didn't understand, that when I tried to explain it, they thought I was expressing sadness, and they didn't really understand that I was talking about something a whole lot heavier and deeper than being sad. And, you know, my mother's from the island, and we have this great drink called guava berry, and it's very rare, and she brought me some, but she brought me the mother. And what happens is when you have the mother, you can keep replenishing. As long as you know how to do it, it will keep producing alcohol for you, right? So here I am with this, like, 1-gallon jug, and I found myself initially, it started with, you know, not being able to get up in the morning and function, and I was still homeschooling the kids, and I needed to do that. And so what I would do is would take a little glass of the guava berry, and I found, oh, my gosh, it completely numbed the pain in my brain, and it allowed me, I was numb, but at least I wasn't in pain. And it took about a couple of weeks that I realized, you know what, you need to pour this down the drain, because if you don't, you're going to spiral into a world of I saw it. I saw it happening. It was definitely the grip was there, because I was in such emotional pain, and the numbing that it provided. And in my family, the people who do drink like that, you know, they're really very functional. No one really can tell that they've even been drinking. So I had to be very, very careful and just cut it at the cord. So talk to us a little bit about your experience and how you found yourself there and how you got yourself out.
I found myself there when I fell into the depression, and I guess I needed a vice. I needed something that was just mine, something that was for me. And mm-hmm. when I drank, I found that I felt better. Whether it was because of my surroundings, whether it was because of, you know, the people I was drinking with, or the fact that maybe I was drinking a little bit too much, and it made me forget, you know, where it made me forget my reality, in a sense. It was as if you said it kind of numbed the pain. So when a little bit numbed it, I started taking a little bit more, and then a little bit more, until it started to get out of control. And it got to the place where the first thing I would do every morning was take a drink. You know, it was the first thing I looked for was my beer. And I guess for me, it helped that I was brought up in church. It helped that I was surrounded by women who loved God. I had a grandmother who just instilled in me a love for God and a trust for God and a faith that is like no other. And I had gotten to the place where I started crying, and I started remembering everything that my grandmother taught me, everything that my mother taught me, and I just took a good look at my life. I was getting drunk every day, you know, and I'm around these little girls who are depending on me, and I started thinking, what do I want them to see? What do I want them to grow up seeing? What do I want my girls to get used to? What do I want to be their reality? And me being drunk was not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't go to AA or anything. It was the will and the love for my children, I think, that pushed me to put the drink down. And I didn't stop cold turkey. I can't say I did that, but I did start to curtail it more. So whereas it was all day for 7 days, it may have been, you know, all day 4 or 5 days, you know. And little by little, I started to cut back until I didn't need to drink anymore. And I started to get more into church, and I started praying more. And that helped me. I can't say that I was able to do it all on my own because, as I said, I needed that. So when I didn't have the alcohol to numb the pain, what I replaced with that was God and my relationship with Him. And I delved into that like I had never had done before. And where the alcohol was numbing the pain, I found that when I got into my relationship with God, He started to heal the pain. And it got to a place where I didn't need a vice. I didn't need anything extra. And I wasn't craving for anything more. And that was enough for me. And when Chris did find us, he enriched our lives so much more than what I could have ever imagined. This is something that I could not have even put into words in a prayer to God. That's how fulfilling my marriage is. I would not have known how to ask for anything like this. And only God could have done it.
When we come back, we'll hear a little bit more about the wonderful journey of love that Chris and Erica have walked together. Thank you.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
And we are back with Chris and Erica Scott, and they're sharing with us their wonderful love journey, love story, and it may sound like a Harlequin romance novel, but it's real. And it's real and grounded in the scriptures and grounded with the power of God. And we just got finished hearing from Erica talk about how the power of God pulled her out of depression, out of alcoholism, and brought her to a place where she felt completely stable and whole in her life and was very content to remain single and just raise her kids. And then the Lord brought Chris into her life. And so, Chris, I want to bring you into the conversation now, because now we go into a different level of things. You know, some women are at the point where they're like, I'm happy, or men, you know, where I am. And then others are like, you know, I really want it. I really want this to come into my life. And then when we get into the relationship, we find that there are triggers that we may not have even known that we had. It might be something that you might have said, or a look that you gave or something, and then all of a sudden it turned into a response. So how did you guys begin to see those moments, and then how did you begin to navigate them?
The Bible says that these two shall become a flesh. Becoming one is not an instantaneous process. It takes time. It takes patience. It takes a whole nother level of commitment to God. I don't know how we would be successful and experience the level of love that we have in the absence of a relationship with God, because no matter who you are, when you're single, you experience trauma, you experience disappointment, you do have those triggers, and there are things that you don't discover about yourself that you don't like or you can't stand until you get married. You know, sometimes you don't understand it until you're actually in it. Like, man, I really don't like that. And so the whole process to learning how to communicate with someone continually and with grace, even in those difficult things, and our relationship was unique because we came into it and there were already children involved. So that's a whole other dynamic to the relationship that I always tell her I got a 3-for-1 package, you know. So, and I was one that, you know, I always asked God, Lord, please don't give me any daughters. I don't want any daughters because I know how protective I am. And God has a sense of humor. He gave me two. Just pack it together with a marriage. We'll go ahead and give you two daughters, you know. So all of those things were, it takes a lot of patience. And if you marry for any other reason than unconditional love, your marriage is doomed to fail. And we always talk about there is no plan B for us. You know, there is no out for us, because the Bible teaches men to love their wives as Christ loved the church. He's married to the church. He is in covenant with the church, that no matter how the church treats him, he still loves them. And men have to understand that it is the love that we show to our wives that creates the safe environment for her to submit to us. And the Bible teaches that we submit one to another. It always says, men, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. So don't marry anybody that you're not willing to die for. And that at the root of love, there is sacrifice. And so I say all that to say that whatever obstacles, whatever triggers, whatever difficulties, whatever trauma that you marry into, and there will be some, if you understand the love of God, you have to love her through it. You have to love her in the midst of it. And you cannot come in with an expectation for her to just be over it. But the Bible teaches us that we have to love some things away, love certain things out. There's certain hurts that you just have to love away, because the reality is that sometimes we don't realize how we respond to certain things. And if you are in a relationship and you become contentious and combative, then it just becomes combustible. But the love of God, as he loved us, that's how, men, we have to learn to love our wives. And it creates an environment for her to feel safe and to submit to what God is saying to us. When you love them right, they'll submit to you. They'll submit to you. And I married a strong one. I married a real strong one. But when you love them right, submission is not a hard thing.
It's very easy.
It's very easy. But we have to understand, once again, it goes back to the relationship that we have with God. If we understand the love that God has for us, it makes us want to worship. It makes us want to submit to his will and to give in and not fight with him, because we understand and we are continually reminded of how much he loved us.
Absolutely, and that always reminds me of the gift of salvation, and I'm very secure in my salvation and the promise of salvation, and the reason for that is because, you know, the Lord has provided those scriptures to help me be secure, and I think of in Romans where it talks about, you know, now that we have been given such liberty and freedom, should we go about, you know, sinning and doing the things of our former nature, Paul says, heaven forbid that we would do that, but we would love the Lord even more so, right? Because when you think about what he's done for you, you don't think, oh, let me just kick off my heels and go party now. You think, no, what can I do for you more? How can I love you more? And I always share on this show, Romans 10 and 9, that if you confess with your mouth Jesus Christ as Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you shall be saved. And that's where your first love begins, and that's where you first really come into understanding what unconditional love is. I'm encouraged by your story because, Chris, while this was your first marriage, I believe Erica, it was your second. And so I still have that, you know, in the hopes and the reins and my vision that, you know, one day I will be able to enter into a marriage union that will last forever. And so it's really so promising to hear how you said that, Chris, about loving her through those moments, through those areas. What are some ways that you had to practically support her?
Well, when you come out of traumatic situations, although you're healed, there's still a mental residue sometimes that your mind, you know, just it still lurks. It's kind of like when you've had a injury in sports. You injure the knee, you go through rehab, the knee is now healed, but you're still nervous. Now, it has nothing to do with not being healed, but it's a mental block, because you have a mental residue about the trauma that you experienced, and it makes it hard for you to live in freedom. And so there are times, there have been times that, you know, Erica didn't realize certain things were still there. There were certain residues that she still built, because the Bible teaches that life and death is in the power of the tongue. So you have to be careful about who you allow to speak over your life, the things that are said to you, the things that are spoken over you. A lot of times they'll resurface. You constantly remember them, and they, if you allow them to take root, they still they have some power over your
emotions.
Your emotions, your thought process, and all these things. So it takes I keep going back, and we have this scripture up in our house, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, and the first line says that the love is patient, and it's an environment for patience where sometimes men have to become good listeners, because women will tell you everything that they're experiencing. Sometimes, guys, we just miss it. You know, we're just not the best listeners. We're not the best talkers either. So those are two areas that we have to work on. But I, as I continue to draw closer to God, I realized, and I would listen to her better, and I'm still working on listening to her better, because there are things that she just needs to talk out. So the first thing I will say is, number one, be present. Don't be so busy doing other things that you're too busy to hear her when she's ready to talk. It may not be when you want to hear it, but it's when she's ready to talk, she's ready to communicate, because she's talking through some things. Women tend to talk through it. Brothers tend to just think through it. But women think it, then they want to talk it out. And so I'm learning, and I have learned, to just talk through it. Number two, mentorship. Don't ever isolate yourself as a husband. Make sure that you have other husbands in your life that have been married longer than you that can help. Every woman is different. but they can kind of help you with some foundational principles to help you be successful. So we're blessed. We have individuals that are in our life that have been married 50-plus years, but that's wisdom that we can constantly lean on, and they're always accessible to us so that we can make sure that we bypass a lot of the mistakes that they make. And then thirdly, I would say you have got to maintain your connection to God in spite of whatever difficult phase he may be moving through. If I didn't have a connection to God, I would respond. But sometimes, man, you just got to shut up and be quiet and let God, remember that that's God's child too, that's not your child. And there are times that when Erica, if she's experiencing something or she's going through something, I have to talk to God for her because sometimes she can't hear me and I can't hear her. We are not good listeners in our emotions, and we all have emotions. We all move through difficult spaces. But it's important to maintain that connection to God so that I know when, okay, let me give her some space and let me talk to God and pray while she is moving through these things. And then God will minister to her. That's the importance of being equally yoked and that you're both saved so that you both have a connection to God.
I think you've given some great practical tips right there and all grounded in Scripture. Excellent. Eric, I want to ask you because, you know, you talked about experiencing abuse on multiple levels, and some people have only experienced one or two, and some have experienced five or six. And, you know, when you get the healing in that area or you believe you have and then you enter into a relationship again, you use the word, you know, initially that it scared you. There was an element of fear to it. Did you find moments that fear just kind of came up in the relationship from time to time?
Absolutely. This was the first real relationship that I'd had since my divorce. So although, you know, I'd say, you know, when he found me, yes, I had a semblance of healing because, you know, back then I would have told you, yes, I'm all the way healed. But moving past that point up until today, you know, wisdom would be honest with you in saying I still had a lot of healing to do. And it doesn't go away immediately. It takes time. You know, it takes time for God to sometimes work out that trauma. Sometimes he'll just take it right out. But for me, he took me through a process of healing, and through that process of healing, I gained more maturity, I gained more wisdom, and I learned how to love my husband. And so now I know that was, you know, my process. Can it be that way for someone else? Sure. But it can actually, you know, be a little faster for them. It all depends, I believe, on an individual and what God is trying to teach them through their lives and through whatever trauma he allowed them to experience at whatever point in their lives. But, yes, yeah. It was for me a lot of fear because my perception in my trauma and where I still was in my emotions, where I wasn't all the way healed, I'll say, my perception of things, you know, whether it was a behavior or something that was said, it always went back to what I experienced. And my husband had to keep reminding me, I'm not him, honey. I'm not him, honey. You know, but yeah. it draws back on what he was saying, that patience that, you know, men and sometimes women have to have because it's not isolated to women, you know, what we went through. Sometimes, you know, what we're talking out, what I'm talking out that I went through in my life, men go through. You know, it's not just females. And, you know, so it says a lot when your spouse, whether husband or wife, can show that patience and that love and that maturity through the other person working through their trauma and just being present. As he said, it meant the world to me that while I was going through and still healing, that he didn't leave me. That, you know, because, oh, my gosh, he could have. He could have said, you know what, I can't do this. it's too much, you know, I don't want to go. I didn't ask God for this, you know. So many times when I'm working through my stuff, he could have left, but he stayed, and he not only stayed, but he prayed with me. He did not only pray for me, but he prayed with me. And that, to me, was, I think, the biggest catalyst to pushing me forward, because I never had a man hold my hand and pray with me for my healing. That, you know, a man that I was in a relationship with, no, I didn't have that. In my first marriage, no, we didn't do that. You know, it means a lot. It means a lot when your husband takes the role of head of household and head of your, you know, in your spiritual life, and pulls you into prayer. It means the world, and I think that was the biggest catalyst for me to move toward healing and maturity, and through all of that, us praying together and my relationship continuing to grow with God and in God, God taught me how to love this man who he brought in my life, because I had no idea. You know, when you're young in a traumatic relationship, I didn't learn how to love. I didn't learn how to treat a husband. I didn't learn anything but how to survive. So God had to teach me how to treat this man who he brought into my life. And I'm happy to say that, you know, I must be doing something right, because he's here, he's happy. Yeah. And we're still going through.
She all right. She all right.
Amen. So when we come back, we're going to hear more about your experiences. I know both of you are looking at putting your experience in a book. So we're going to come back and talk about that next.
Enough for me, yeah. You're the one, you're the one.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
Well, I've just been having inspiring and all-around great time listening to Chris and Erica Scott share their journey. It's giving me hope as someone who looks to have the joy of marriage in my life again at some point. Now, I just wrote a book, as many of you know, called Don't Give Up and Win, A Survival Guide to Renewed Virginity, and that's for those of us who are practicing abstinence at any age, but particularly those of us who are doing it the second time around, you know, after a failed marriage, separation, divorce, being widowed, or some type of unusual circumstance where your spouse is not with you. Maybe they're in the military, maybe they're incarcerated, maybe they're ill, and, you know, and you just have to maintain and figure out how to address these days and even these holidays like Valentine's Day and keep your sanity. So that book is available. It's on Amazon. You just type in Don't Give Up and Win and you'll see it there. But I guess I'll come to you first, Chris. I know that you've put together a devotional. Can you talk to us a little bit about that and what it's speaking to?
Yes, God just laid on my heart earlier this year, and Erica really pushed me to complete meditation. It's a series of devotionals. It's actually 7 books. I just completed the first one, which is 21 Days to a Healthier Mind, and it deals with healing and forgiveness and a lot of the things. I think that there's so many things we cannot control, but there's a lot of things that we can control. And the one thing that God tells us to control, and that should be a byproduct of our relationship with the Holy Ghost, is ourselves. Self-control. Self-control is something that you can control. You can't control the people around you. You can't control the things that happen to you. But dealing with that internal environment is the focus of Meditations Volume 1, regulating the mind and getting the mind back on track to dream again, to believe again, to have faith again, to love again. That's the goal of the first volume of meditation. So it'll be available on Amazon February 19th, and it'll be in bookstores everywhere April 1st. So I'm super excited, and this contribution is from Erica. She helped me write that life application. So at the end of each day, there's a life application where you can take the information presented from the scripture, from the story, and then a tip to how to apply it to your life, because information is great, but if there's no application, there won't be any revelation. So I'm excited about it. I pray that it blesses you to be available February 19th on Amazon.
Well, do make sure to send me the link on Facebook, and I'll make sure to post it and make sure the audience knows about it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Not a problem. And Erica, are you working on a separate project as well?
I am. My book is called Fight, and it is speaking directly to divorcees. When I went through my divorce, I lost myself. So to speak. I lost my way. I lost my focus, sunk into depression, and so many things took hold where I had to fight to regain control of my life. And so this is just speaking to divorcees specifically, men and women. It's not a book just for females, but it's speaking to divorcees and guiding them through the reality of what we have felt, what we're going through, what we need to do to move past all of those feelings of rejection and hurt and trauma and push through to what God has for our lives. I remember praying before Christopher found me. I remember praying to God and saying, God, this can't be the end of my story. You know, just divorce and, you know, that's it. That's the end of, you know, what I have to tell people. It can't be. It has to be more to my life. You know, if not in a marriage, then what? You know, and I'm realizing that because I did not give up and because I stayed fervent in prayer and pushing through with my relationship with God, I was able to hear him, and I was able to see what my life actually held. And being a wife and a mother to now my three children, because we've had a son together. And so many people have told us that, you know, I am and we are, he and I, operations. And, you know, I've gotten into so many athletic, you know, ventures, and now we're writing books. He's released CDs. It's so much more to life. And I need to tell people, fight past where you are right now, because this is not the end of your story. So that's the gist of my book, just to give people a little hope in moving past the trauma of what you feel right then and there to the end of your story and the destiny that God has for you. And I'll just say that it's coming soon.
All right. Well, keep me posted. I would definitely love to keep you in touch, keep in touch with you in regards to that, since it's right in line with the motto of this show. You know, don't give up is designed for those who are reaching towards a dream while they're pushing away their challenges. You know, it's not that the people who make it to the finish line didn't have any obstacles along the way. They just kept their focus. Like
right.
You said, Erica, focus is key. And it's very easy once you've gone through something traumatic to lose your focus and to lose your footing.
Yes.
And you don't want to make any major decisions during that time, because, indeed, you can definitely make a decision that might cost you everything. I love just some of the major takeaways from this show is, you know, that anyone who's listening, that you understand that whatever you're going through, there are other people who have experienced it. And I reminded Chris from the first show, you talked about the analogy of personal training, and sometimes we're training for the very thing, the very goal that we prayed for, that we asked for, but because it's grueling, because it's difficult, we start to complain and lose sight of our bottom line. But if we connect with the right people that can help us navigate through difficult times, we can make it through. Do each of you, we have like, you know, 2 minutes left. Do each of you have something you'd like to say as a parting word to our listeners regarding relationships?
I'd like to say very briefly that I'd like to just encourage anybody who single, divorced, who may have lost hope, to know that there is something more, there is something better. If you just focus on God, he'll bring it in your life. I am a testimony to that. He'll bring it in your life. He will add to you everything that you have been praying for. He will give you all of the desires of your heart if you diligently seek him.
Well, for those of you who are listening, I want you to know this, the month of February, we're going to continue to talk with power couples. When I say power couples, I'm talking about real couples who have gone through crisis, who've gone through difficulties, and who have managed to stand the test of time. And so we're going to look at what I call real love, real unconditional love, through the rest of the month. I'd also like to let you know that on February 17th, my book will be available for $0.99 only on the 17th. So keep that in mind. And until next week, I want you, until next week, I want you to go ahead and be your own best hero, because the greatest hero of all said that you are worth it when he gave his life for you on the cross. God bless you all and have a great night. Thank you guys for joining us.